It is our great privilege and pleasure to continue our study in the book of Job. We're now ready to begin the third chapter of Job. At this point, Job has been greatly afflicted by the devil. He has lost all of his earthly possessions. He's lost his 10 children. That didn't make him curse God, which is what the devil wanted him to do. Now the devil has afflicted Job's own body with grievous sores from his bottom of his feet to the top of his head. He's in torment and agony. He's sitting in ashes. He still doesn't curse God. His wife says, curse God and die. She's even tempting him now. But he still remains steadfast here. And now he has his friends come to see him. Three of these friends are named in the second chapter, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And a fourth friend is named in chapter 32, Elihu. And the friends have sat now for 7 days with Job, not said anything, till finally in this third chapter, Job speaks. In this chapter, we have a decided change in Job's attitude. After sitting with his friend for 7 days and nights with no one speaking, Job finally does speak. When we see what he said, it would have been better, perhaps, if he had not spoken even then. James 5:11 speaks of the patience of Job. We wonder that a man could be so patient as Job was in chapters 1 and 2, but now we wonder that a good man could seem to be so impatient as Job does in this third chapter. The first verse of chapter 3 says, after this opened Job his mouth and cursed his day. What Job says is not good. The very difficult position he was in with his terrible sickness may partly excuse what he says, but there's no real justification for cursing the day of his birth. He is not remembering the good years. The lean cattle have eaten up the fat ones, and he's filled only with memories of the bad and wishes he had never been born. The prophet Jeremiah, when he had troubles, used language very similar to Job's. In Jeremiah 15:10, woe is me, my mother, that thou hast borne me a man of strife and a man of contention to the whole earth. Jeremiah 20:14-18, cursed be the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, a man-child is born unto thee, making him very glad. And let that man be as the cities which the Lord overthrew, and repented not. Let him hear the cry in the morning, and the shouting at noontide, because he slew me not from the womb, or that my mother might have been my grave, and her womb will be always great with me. Wherefore came I forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame. It seems that the sacred scriptures allow us to see the very depths of despair of some of the great Bible characters and thus get a view of their human weakness when they were under great stress. The Bible does not give a sugar-coated story. It tells the bad along with the good. We see Job here in his worst hour of distress. We can suppose that Job, in his prosperity, had many times thanked God for the day of his birth and thought of it as a happy day, yet he now blames it as his worst day. Verses 2 and 3 say, and Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. We know that when we enter this world, sin and sorrow, that day is worse than when we enter into the joys of our Lord in heaven. But to curse the day we were born is to quarrel with the business of God, who has the residue of the Spirit and is responsible for our spirit being placed in this body. It is to despise the dignity of our being and to allow ourselves to have improper feelings, of which we will be ashamed in times of calm and sober thoughts. Certainly, in any condition in this life, in which we are accountable for our actions, we can honor God and work out our own salvation and make sure we will have the better heavenly home eventually. Thus, we have no reason at all to wish we had never been born, but we have many reasons to say that we had an existence here on earth for a good purpose. Yet we must also say, if there were not another life after this, and a way made for us to obtain it, then the sorrows and troubles of this life would greatly tempt us to wish we'd never been born. There are those in hell who have good reason to wish they had never been born, such as Judas. Matthew 26:24, the Son of Man goeth as it was written of him, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. But while in this life, with our good senses, and with a chance to avoid the place of torment, There's no good reason for such a wish as Job expressed, let the day perish wherein I was born. This was Job's weakness and folly to curse his day. God's people do have weaknesses. They have infirmities. To say that they are perfect means they are upright, not that they are sinless. All have sins, but not all have been forgiven of sins. Let us also observe that though many may have cursed the day of their first birth, never have any cursed the day of their new birth, nor wish that they had never known the grace and forgiveness of sins given to them. These gifts of grace and forgiveness reach beyond our life and being upon this earth. Yet as bad as Job's words were, they were not as bad as Satan predicted. Job cursed his day, but he did not curse his God. He was tired of his life. He would have gladly parted with it, but he was not tired of his religion. He steadfastly clings to his faith in God and will never let it go. The dispute between God and Satan about Job was not whether Job had weaknesses, not whether he was subject to like passion as we are, but whether he was a hypocrite who secretly hated God and if he were made to suffer would turn on God and curse God. Yet when Job was tried, he proved that he was no such man. He stood the test. He gave God the victory over Satan. His actions actually are consistent with his great example of being patient. For though he did speak unwisely about his birth, he did before and after show great submission and respect for the holy will of God. He later repented of his impatience. He condemned himself for it, and therefore God did not condemn him, and neither must we condemn him. But we must watch more carefully ourselves, lest we fall into the same weakness as Job in wishing that we'd never been born. This wish of Job, that he'd never been born, uses great and powerful poetical expressions, which we see as we read these next verses. Verses 3 through 6 say, "Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there's a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months." Let that day be destroyed as though it never existed, is what he says in verse 3. Let that day be darkness as though it had no light, no sun, as if to actually undo God's creation of light in verse 4. Let not God regard it, even God would not count it as a day, verse 4. Not only will the day be dark, but it'll have the shadow of death instead of the sun. Job did not want his life or any other life to be connected with that day, verse 5. The day would have nothing but darkness, no sun, and the night would be seized with darkness, no moon, no stars, verses 6. Job wishes for this day to be taken off the calendar and not to even exist, verse 6. In verses 7 through 9, he further says, "Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none, neither let it see the dawning of the day." Job wants no pleasure to be had in that day, verse 7. No joyful voice, no song, no music. Let the night be solitary. If anybody ever curses a day, let it be that day which is cursed, verse 8. Treat it as a funeral day. Those who are professional mourners, let that day be their day. Let those that curse the day of the death of others, in the same breath, curse the day of my birth. The word for mourning actually should be translated as Leviathan, which is some kind of a sea monster. Figurative or literal, Job seemed to say, let that monster rise up and swallow that day. Let this day have no stars at its twilight. Let this day never see the sun at its dawn, verse 9. In the 10th verse, he says, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Here's the reason Job cursed his birthday, because his mother's womb did not close and keep him from being born. We see here the true depth of Job's despair. First of all, maybe Job, though he uses brilliant words and expressions, is so beset with pain that he loses his ability to reason rationally. Secondly, perhaps he temporarily enters a fantasy and dream state. Thirdly, for his wish to be granted that his mother should fail to give birth when her time of labor had come was to wish for her death at that time. Fourthly, how foolish to wish his eyes had never seen the light, just so he could see no sorrow, when he was also allowed to see so much joy. Fifthly, this is the Job who expressed the belief that he should see God at the latter day, chapter 19:26. And sixthly, this indicates to me that Job's ability to think clearly may have been temporarily affected by the pain of his disease. In the next few verses, verses 11 through 19, we have an overview of Job's situation. Beginning with verse 11, "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or why the breast that I should suck? For now, should I have lain still and been quiet, I should have slept. Then had I been at rest with the kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with the princes that had gold, or who filled their houses with silver, or as an hidden untimely birth, I had not been, as infants which never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master." Job, possibly realizing it is a pure folly to wish he'd never been born, now seems to modify the wish to abolish his birthday, and now wishes he had died as soon as he was born. Now we find Job cursing the fact that he had lived beyond his birth. Job here complains of life and the supports of life given to him, and longs for death and the grave as the most desirable and greatest bliss. Surely Satan was deceived when he said of Job, "All that a man hath will he give for his life." For no man seemed to value life as little as Job did at this time. Verses 11 through 12 say this: "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or why the breast that I should suck?" Job complains about life and is angry that it was not taken from him as soon as it was given. We see here what a truly weak and helpless creature man is when he comes into this world, and what a truly slender thread life is. We are in danger of dying from the womb and may stop breathing as soon as we start. Except for our death day, our birthday is one of the most dangerous days of our lives. We humans can do nothing for ourselves at birth as other creatures can. If the knees did not receive us and the breast nourish us, we would be ready for the grave at birth. What merciful care God took of us when we entered into this world. God put natural affection into the hearts of our parents so we could have the life sustaining care from our first day on earth. Verse 13, "For now, should I have lain still and been quiet, I should have slept, then had I been at rest. Now I'm tossing and miserable. I cannot sleep, I'm restless. But had I died at birth, I would have been still and quiet and at rest." We desire to be with the Lord after death. Job desired to just die in the grave, which is just a fantasy when we know what follows death. Job longs for quiet rest from his present misery, and he longs to get it by having died on the day he was born. Verses 14 and 15, "With kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver." Job reasons like this, that had he died at birth, his condition would have been as good as that of the best. He had been with kings and counselors of the earth, which built palaces which are now in ruins. I would have been the same as princes who had gold or who filled their houses with silver. Death truly is the great leveler. The richest and most powerful cannot bribe death to overlook them. Man in all his wisdom has not been able to escape the grave, and the grave is no different from common dust. The baby who dies at birth is on the same level with the mighty when they die. There seems to be no racial prejudice or generation gap after death. Here we see the picture of an unnamed baby who hardly tasted breath or saw life, taking his place among the most powerful, the most feared, the most wise on earth after death. Job says he would have been with the kings and counselors and princes of the earth had he died on the day he was born. Verse 16 says, "Or as an hidden untimely birth, I had not been as infants which never saw light." Here he is saying that had he been born as a stillborn child and hidden in the earth, the results would have been the same. This child lies as soft and as easy, is as high and safe as kings and counselors and princes that had gold. Job is saying, "I would rather lay there in the dust in that condition than have to have lived after birth and lie in these ashes." And how sobering is the thought as we think of the willful taking of the life of a baby by the act of abortion, knowing that that baby will meet us on our own level after death. That baby is a living soul. That baby is not just some glob. It's a human life that you're taking when you abort an unborn baby. Verse 17 says, "There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest." When those who are wicked die, they can no longer cause trouble. When persecutors die, they can no longer persecute. Herod had vexed the church, but when he was eaten of worms, he ceased from troubling. When those who had been persecuted die, they're out of danger from being further troubled by their former enemies. They can be persecuted no more by anyone here on this earth. Had Job been at rest in the grave, he would not have been bothered by the Sabaeans and the Chaldeans, nor the lightning or the wind, or would any of his enemies have caused him any trouble. Those that are now troubled will there have those troubles come to an end in the grave. Those who are now weary will then be at rest. Verse 18 says, "There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor." There the prisoners can rest. They can hear not the voice of the slave driver. They are no longer trampled on, insulted, terrified, or misused by their masters. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. Verse 19, "The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master." Those that were doomed to a lifetime of servitude, those that were born to be slaves, will be free. The servant is free from his master. Let those who have power now take heed that they use it wisely, for this power will fail them eventually. The servant will no longer be under subjection. The small and the great are there. All stations of life will be there together. And this state of death that Job longs for has been described in these words: leveled by death, the conqueror and the slave, the wise and the foolish, cowards and the brave, lie mixed and undistinguished in the grave. In the next section of this chapter, verses 20 through 26, Job shows that he knows that it is in vain to wish he had never been born, or to wish he had died as soon as he were born. So he now complains because his life is allowed to continue and is not cut off. There seems to be no end to Job's quarrel with life at this particular time. Having cursed the day of his birth and complaining because he has survived birth, he here longs for the day of his death. In verse 20 he says, "Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul?" Job thinks it's a mystery why miserable lives are allowed to continue. Bitterness of soul makes life in general bitter. The whole tone of life is set by the condition of the soul. Just as a bitter soul makes for a bitter life, a sweet, contented soul makes for a happy life. The condition of the soul is all important. Job asks the question, why doth he give light or life? He implies that God is unkind and unjust to continue life when the comforts of life are removed. Life is called light, for it is as a candlelight. The longer it burns, the shorter it gets. It is said to be given to us as a gift. But Job reckons it to be a gift that the miserable would be better to be without, while the light seems to only allow them to see their own misery. This is an example of how distorted the human reasoning can become, especially when under stress, that death, though normally dreaded, may become a desirable thing, even when there is still hope for a life. In verse 21, he says, "Which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than for hid treasures." Job here speaks of those who long for death, who have lost their comforts, lost their usefulness, burdened with age, weakness, pain, sickness, poverty, or disgrace, and yet death does not come. While at the same time death comes to many who dread it and would like to put it off, We learn here that the gift of life and the length of life should be according to God's will and not according to our will. It is not according to the great plan of divine providence that we should make the decision how long we should live or when we should die. These decisions are in much better hands than in our own. Job describes the longing of those who want death as those who dig for it more than hidden treasure. They would give anything for an acceptable way to exit this life. This implies that Job is here speaking of those who really give no thought to suicide, otherwise they would not have tried so hard for death, for in suicide they could have it any time they pleased. The thought of those who look upon death like a hidden treasure may refer to a hope of a better life in heaven, to which death is a necessary passage. This thought and the hope of heaven tends to erase the fear of death. It may be a sin to long for death before the will of God decrees it, but it is no sin to long for heaven. Verse 22 says, "Which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave." We know that those who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave are those who are serving God and who have treasure in heaven awaiting them. We are not told to long for death because of life's hardships and trials. Rather, we long for death only because it is God's will for us and it is our entry into the joys of our Lord. We, as followers of God, are taught that we are to be ready to die in the midst of life's greatest comforts and in the midst of life's greatest trials, we're to be ready to live. But it seems that Job's reasoning was just the reverse. We plan to continue this third chapter of Job in our next lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.